Our next speaker is Marcia Rosenbaum. Marcia is a sociologist who did her doctoral work on heroin addiction, and she's really been in the trenches of harm reduction on heroin addiction. But I want to tell a story on Marcia. I know she's a sociologist because we were at lunch one day and we were talking about Montel Williams as a spokesman for medical cannabis, and we were kind of guessing about what sort of reaction Montel would have in the world out there. And as a sociologist, she said, well, let's just start asking people. So she hopped up from her chair and she went from table to table and she would ask them, when I say Montel, what is you here? Everybody knew Montel Williams. They were able to give that identification. And then she'd say, well, do you know that Montel has been in the news lately? And mostly what would happen is that the demographic of kind of 50-year-old white women knew that Montel had been in the news because he had been on the talk show circuit for his medical cannabis, or they knew that he'd been on the news. And then she would say, well, do you know why he's been on the news? And most of them didn't, but they would say, well, what's going on? And then Marcia would use the occasion to introduce the idea, and she said, well, he has multiple sclerosis and he smokes medical cannabis. And I will never forget the response from one of the women at one of the tables who, when Marcia said that, snorted and said, huh, well, that'll make him forget he has MS. I was like, wow, that is the kind of hostility we're dealing with out there when we talk about this issue. And Marcia is very courageous to raise the question with people in a restaurant. She's also been very courageous, probably the person single most responsible for bringing the California Parent Teacher Association on board for sensible approaches to drug education in our schools. In the terms of rhetoric, she is a mom who cares about her kids. It makes her a very valuable messenger in bringing the message of harm reduction. So without further ado, Marcia Rosenbaum.
Now, remember, we were in Los Angeles for that lunch. We were not in San Francisco. The reaction would have been very different here, I think. So I want to share with you some of my experiences with rhetoric. You know, when Alan called me to ask me to be on this panel, I didn't even ask him what the panel was. I said, of course, you know, whatever you need. And then I looked at the title of the panel, Reefer Rhetoric and Retorts, Winning Ways to Frame the Marijuana Debate. And at that moment when I looked at it, I thought I had just gone on a trip with an actual trip to Turkey, actually, with my friend Donald Abrams. And he was talking about how his mother, not only does she talk about how the glass is half empty, but the glass is half empty and about to tip over. And that's how I've felt lately, this last month or so, with our issue. So I thought, winning ways, okay. So here's what I want to share with you, what it's like out there in conventional America to talk about the issue of marijuana. First, I have framed the issue as carefully as I can, particularly when it comes to teenagers and drug use and marijuana use, which is my focus. You know, basically, I don't think mainstream America really cares about what we say about marijuana until you start getting close to the kids. Now, when you get an audience with the kids, then they start getting nervous about what you're going to say. So I've been very, very careful, and of course, I look like the straightest person that ever walked. Roger Goodman thinks he does, but I think I do. And so what I've tried to do is to influence the marijuana debate without talking about marijuana. My purposes were I wanted to educate parents, tell the truth, let them hear the truth. I wanted to advocate for, and still do, for honest science-based drug education in schools, two. And my third purpose was to and is to undemonize marijuana. So here's what seems to have worked. Now, David introduced me and used the words harm reduction a couple of times. And in fact, a decade ago, I had a booklet published, this one. It's called Kids, Drugs, and Drug Education, A Harm Reduction Approach. Bad title. Really bad title. First off, harm reduction has now become a lightning rod, so you can't really use it anyway. But harm reduction is sort of negative terms. Harm is negative. Reduction is negative. Kids, I don't say kids anymore if I can help it. Sometimes it comes out of my mouth because I think about my own children who I call my kids, and they're in their 20s, but kids doesn't work. What I found was in terms of a title for what I was doing, instead of harm reduction, safety first. Safety positive. Nobody objects to safety. Everyone likes safety. And first is first. And it's the tagline, a reality-based approach. Reality. I think when we talk about reality, what's really going on, that's a positive word. And teens. I use teens instead of kids now. So I also, much to the chagrin of Ethan Nadelman, our executive director, have tried to influence drug education without putting it in the context of broader drug policy reform or marijuana reform. And so when I do presentations and talks, it's safety first. It's a safety first project. And then down there in the little tagline is a project of the Drug Policy Alliance, which Ethan hates. But anyway, so that's what I've tried to do is to put some distance. Also, another strategy that has heads nodding more than anything else, I think, is making sure that your definition of drugs is broad. When you start to talk about pharmaceutical drugs, when you start to talk about the commercials we see on television, on primetime TV, with this wonderful, very nice person asking you if you're worried all the time, and it's, of course, a commercial for Prozac or Paxil or one of those, this is a drug. It changes the way you think and feel and perceive things. And once, when people grasp, and they do quickly, that, hey, what we're talking about here, we're talking about marijuana and other illegal drugs, but really, there's no difference. A drug is a drug is a drug is a drug. And I think Americans now more than ever recognize that and are right there with you. You say, we're a drug-free America? Are you kidding? Of course, I always have a cup of Starbucks with me and say, this is my favorite drug. And they get that that's a drug, too. I also have found that, of course, we know this in our strategy with marijuana reform, is that when you equate marijuana policy with alcohol, people recognize that there are similarities between the two. I mean, they don't often know how much more dangerous alcohol is than marijuana, but I try to use the word prohibition whenever I can. Get people to see that this prohibition, marijuana prohibition, is the same as alcohol prohibition. Everybody knows that alcohol prohibition didn't work. That's a mantra. Oh, yeah, that didn't work. Okay, this is a prohibition, too. It's not working either. Another thing I've been using lately is that I keep hearing, I was talking to Keith about this last night and several other people, I'm so discouraged about the potency debate, which is not a debate out there in conventional America. They think, we believe the government's rhetoric that this marijuana is a million times more potent, all right, 30 times more potent, whatever. And so even people who are now in their 40s and 50s who used marijuana, conventional people, think that this is a qualitatively different drug. So we're not even arguing over marijuana anymore. They think it's a dangerous and scary kind of substance that they have no familiarity with. So I asked them, and this is usually in PTA groups. So they tell me this. Well, what about potency? And I say, well, how do you know that? How do you know that marijuana is more potent now? I say, well, I saw it on an ad. I say, what kind of ad do you think it was? Well, the government, the Office of National Drug Control Policy. I said, so that came out of the government. The government is the way that you know that this marijuana is a different substance. And they go, well, yeah. And I say, really? And you also believe that there actually were weapons of mass destruction now, do you? So they stop. Wait a minute. Ooh, the government. I've also found it useful in drug education, marijuana education, to draw parallels between this kind of education and sexuality education. I find that the word comprehensive education is much better even than abstinence plus kind of education, and that seems to work. Also, I agree with people who say, and I'm usually the first to say it actually, that it would be better if adolescents would abstain from experimentation with alcohol, marijuana, and other drugs, because I do believe that. So you can agree, we agree, abstinence would be best. But then I insist whoever I'm talking to, whether it's Bill O'Reilly, who couldn't answer this one either, okay, so we all agree abstinence would be best. But what if the kids refuse to be abstinent? What if they don't listen? They don't always listen. And I want to know, what is your fallback strategy if they don't just say no? What's the fallback strategy? What is your plan B? And, of course, they have no plan B because they're so invested in saying no, 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 that they don't have another set of admonitions for the kids. So they can't answer that one. And finally, I find that speaking from the heart has been really rewarding and useful for me. I use I a lot more than I ever did when I was an academic. And much to the chagrin of my children, I use them as examples all the time. And it has been, when I'm talking to audiences of parents who also have kids who, like my kids, didn't always do everything they told them to do when they told them to do it. These parents, mostly women in the PTA, get it. And that's how we got into the PTA. It's that their kids weren't perfect. They wanted a fallback strategy, and they weren't finding it anywhere else. So those are some experiences. I just want to tell you, though, that in terms of how the other side uses the rhetoric that works for us, they 10 years ago, I don't think they really noticed us. I think that's why Proposition 215 passed in the form it passed in, and by the margin that it passed at. They're watching us now. They are watching us now. They're probably in this room right now. They're probably and I'm not a paranoid person by nature. I'm really not. Some people think I'm too trusting, but I know they're there. I know you're there. is that they see what resonates for us. And then they take that rhetoric and they use it. I'll give you an example. Random student drug testing, which is the new push of the federal government, which is the scariest thing of all, I think. They're marching forward on this, and school districts and parents are lapping this stuff up. Let me tell you, if it weren't for our movement and us holding this thing back a little bit, providing some kind of rhetoric for opposing random student drug testing, I worry that they'd be testing all our kids, and the next thing in line after they test the kids is us for driver's licenses. It's a slippery slope, I think. But anyway, now when you look at their rhetoric on random student drug testing, it's not about punishment. No. We want to help the kids. We want to provide them with a way to say no, because we know they all want to, and they're just peer pressure is so strong. So they take our rhetoric about talking and relationships and parents and kids, and they twist it. But mostly what they do is they attack and they twist our language and they use it to discredit us. I'll just give you a couple of examples, and I wish I had this, but I don't, because Clint Werner just provided me with the May issue of May 2006. This is National Geographic, okay? And you can't see this, but you can see maybe that this is a green page with a marijuana leaf, okay? And the first thing you see is this word yes, and you're going, wait a minute, National Geographic here. But what it says is, if you're not telling them no, you're telling them yes. And this is the parents, the anti-drugs. So this is the Office of National Drug Control, basically saying, you guys who are saying, well, just say K-N-O-W, you're not saying no, so you must be saying yes. So that's they do that. A couple of other examples. The Scientologists, I'm so grateful to see that it was them this time, posted a thing on some website. You can't tell what they are. Somebody else had to tell me, who are these people? It said it had a whole article about safety first, and it said drug education or educating druggies. So you may remember the term druggies from the Supreme Court case. Also, in terms of things that were not a good idea for me, last year at this conference, we talked about this book, It's Just a Plant. And what happened was, it's a book for parents of young children who they're still getting read to, and they get caught smoking marijuana, and how do they tell their kids about what this thing really is? That's what this book is about. And the guy who is the artist and the author of it asked me if I would make a statement about it, which I love the book. And in a moment of being emboldened, I don't remember why I was so emboldened that particular week, I said, yes, I'm going to stand on principle. I will write an epilogue for your book. And it basically says, this is good drug education, that's all. Well, that's not what Mark Souter thought in Congress when he holds the thing up and criticizes DPA. And see, this is evidence. These people advocate marijuana use for children. So that's how things get. And Calvina Fay, our old friend, used it too. So that was a bad idea. It's also was a bad idea, I must tell you, that I got a call from a person who told me that his organization was, his name is Cliff Kincaid, and it's a very inaccurate title for the organization that he heads up, which is called Accuracy in Media. But what do I know? Calls me up and he says, were you on a panel in which you said that it would be useful for controlled drug users to be part of drug education? And I thought, And so I said, where is it? And he told me where it was. And I went and looked at the video. And the only way that I knew that the thing was at least a decade ago, if not more, was that my hair hasn't been that short in 10 years. So I went, uh-oh. And so indeed it was. And but in another moment of feeling confident and emboldened, I had just gone to the National PTA Convention and ran a workshop there, and it was so wonderful. It just went really, really well. And so I said to him, well, I think that was me. Yeah, I said, of course, my thinking has evolved. Hasn't everybody's in 10 years? I probably wouldn't say the same thing. But I just want you to know that our message is resonating, I say to him. Our message of safety first is resonating. As an example, I just spoke at the National PTA Convention, and it went great. Well, bad idea, another bad idea. He then starts a letter-writing campaign to the PTA, to the National PTA, discrediting, saying, do you know that you had at your conference a drug legalizer? And so now starts a letter-writing campaign to the National PTA. California State PTA didn't care. They say, oh, we don't listen to them. So they're, you know, that's because that's California. Anyway, those are some experiences. Remember, I know that they're watching. I only take heart. So be careful, careful, careful about what you say. It's going to get recorded. The next thing you know, you were on a panel with Ed Rosenthal. And what does that mean? But I think that it's also evidence that they're scared, they're watching because they're scared, and they know that we're winning, so I guess we must be winning. Thank you.